This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Oprah Winfrey didn't know. Quincy Jones didn't know. Whoopi Goldberg didn't know. Even Henry Louis Gates Jr., academia's Captain Africa, the man who edited the Continent's Encyclopedia, didn't know where his family really traced to. It's genealogy, it's genetics. Like millions of African Americans, their family stories, their family trees, were lost in the apocalypse of slavery. Names lost, countries of origin lost, trails of paternity lost, and hijacked by slave owners. Now, with a lot of research and new genetic science, Oprah and Whoopi and Quincy and Skip Gates and many more are discovering family trees and big surprises. Up next on Point, genes, genealogy, and African America. Joining me now in the studio, and we're delighted to have him, is Henry Louis Skip Gates, Jr. He's one of our foremost African-American scholars. Time magazine voted him one of the 25 most influential Americans, described him as possessing the braininess of the legendary black scholar W.E.B. Du Bois and the chutzpah of P.T. Barnum. He's co-editor with Anthony Appiah of the Encyclopedia of the African and African-American Experience, a champion of unheard black voices. Professor Gates jump-started the Afro-American Studies Department at Harvard University, where he is chair. I'm delighted to have you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be on the program.
Well, it's really great to have you. And this is just, it's a tremendous documentary, a tremendous ride. I love family history, but you've broken open something that was hard to break open, hard for many individuals, hard for a people in a way in African-American lives, the documentary. You've looked at so many aspects of the African-American experience. What is it that brought you around to this, to diving into particular family histories, your own, Oprah's, Whoopi's, Quincy Jones, and all the rest? What brought you here?
Well, that's easy. Since 1977, when Alex Haley's great saga aired every night on ABC and everyone virtually in the United States sat glued and riveted to their TV set.
Roots.
I have had roots envy. I would sit around with Quincy Jones, who's a good buddy of mine, and we would, Quincy likes vodka and cranberry juice, right? So we'd drink vodka and cranberry juice, look at his palace where he lives, at the nicest house in the world, looking out in the Hollywood Hills. He'd look at me and say, I envy Alex so much. Alex went to his grave believing that he had found the village in the Gambia where his ancestors,
that
slave ancestors, had
gone to Africa and stood among his forebears, his people.
Right. And so I wanted that too. And I'm an Africanist. I write about African literature. I've been to 21 African countries. I've even hitchhiked across the equator when I was 20 years old. I wanted to know. And in addition, when I was 10 years old, my grandfather, Edward Gates Jr., died. It was 1960. It was the first time I saw a burial at went to a cemetery and saw someone buried. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I saw my father cry, so that stamps that moment indelibly in my mind. But something else does as well. Daddy took us back to the Gates family home on Green Street in Cumberland, Maryland. Mm-hmm. And he took me upstairs to Pop Gates, my grandfather's room. Mm-hmm. And he was an amateur historian, and he collected scrapbooks, and he would clip the newspaper all the time. And Daddy showed me an obituary and a photograph. And the obituary was dated January 7th, 1888. Mm. And the headline was, Jane Gates, an estimable colored woman.
An estimable colored woman.
And she was my great-great-grandmother. Yeah. And it said that she had been a midwife and a nurse. And so there she was. And then after I read through that obituary in this white newspaper in this white town in Western Maryland on the Potomac River, he showed me her photograph. And that photograph has haunted me ever since. And he told me that the white man who owned her fathered her children. And so I wanted to find out my family tree.
Here was the family story. And I've seen that photograph, and it is a very arresting photograph. This is a woman of deep substance. You can see it in her eyes, in the cut of her face.
Nobody messed with that lady.
No.
She was one tough sister. And so I wanted to find out who the white man was. We had this family story that it was Samuel Brady, the white man who owned her. And when her son, my great-grandfather Edward Gates, died, he insisted that his obituary say that he had been born on Brady's farm, signaling that Samuel Brady was his father. And so for 100 years, Samuel Brady has been my white Irish great-great-grandfather.
At least in the mythic version of the Gates family history.
You got it. So if you combine these two impulses, these two strains of envy, Africa through Alex and Afro-America through Jane Gates's obituary, they came together in the middle of one night. I got up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And it hit me like a bolt of lightning. Why not do a series in which I would pick 8 prominent African Americans, and maybe they would let me squeeze myself in there as a knight, and I would trace their family history deep into slavery using the most scientific genealogical methodologies perfected by the Mormons, as we say.
The master record keepers of genealogy.
Right. You know,
because their religion is woven around that whole universe.
It is. You want to know where you go when you die? You go to the Family History Library in Salt Lake City. They have the records of 3 billion human beings.
Right.
And most of them are now digitized, which made it possible for us to do this series and the research in 6 months rather than 6 years.
So in a way, that's old-fashioned genealogy, but turbocharged by the systemization that they've done.
Absolutely.
And then you went to new science as well,
and
to genetics.
And then when the paper trail would end, as inevitably it does, in the tomb of slavery, because, as you know, slaves didn't have a legal surname and legal last name. They only had first names. And it's extraordinarily difficult to trace them unless you know the white people who own them, and unless they left a will or tax records or records of estate division. When that trail ended, then we would swab their cheeks, and we would take them to Africa through the wonders of DNA. And so the next afternoon, I started to say the next morning, but that would have been a lie, because Quincy is a jazz musician. He sleeps till the middle of the afternoon. I called him, and he said, man, what are you talking about? Can you do that? And I said, I could do a cue. He said, I'm in. And I said, would you help me get Oprah? And he said, well, write this address. And I sent her a letter. And a week later, my phone rang, and I looked at the caller ID, and it said Quincy Jones. So I said, hey, Q, how you doing?
Right.
And there was a pause, and a woman's voice said, Dr. Gates? I said, yes. She said, this is Oprah Winfrey, and I would be honored to be on your show. So I tried to keep cool, but when I hung up, I went, I got me a series.
You got the cornerstone right there, and it's not just, I mean, it's Oprah. It's Quincy Jones himself took part in it ultimately. Whoopi Goldberg is there. Bishop T.D. Jakes.
T.D. Jakes is my man.
A mountain of a man, and what a preacher on the dais. You've got plenty of footage of him at the Potter's House in Dallas.
I'm on crutches. He made me get the Holy Ghost.
He does it. Chris Tucker, the comedian and actor, star of Rush Hour and its sequels. Dr. Mae Jemison, astronaut.
And a medical doctor.
Yes, medical doctor, first African-American woman to travel into space. Dr. Ben Carson.
He was my classmate at Yale, class 73.
Neurosurgeon Johns Hopkins and Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, professor of education at Harvard.
Sarah's my dear colleague at Harvard in School of Education, and she's a member of the board of the Du Bois Institute, which I have the pleasure of directing.
So there we are, and you're armed with the genealogical science of the Mormons, the genetic science that's pouring out all over the place now where, I mean, not just African Americans. Anyone can have take a swab from the inside of the cheek and get a kind of a dots on the map where their ancestry is most likely came from.
Have you done it, Tom?
I have not done it, though. But it's interesting. I come from a family that very, very attuned to family history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talk about it all the time, not because it's necessarily glorious. I mean, my folks, 1680, were indentured servant, the first African in this country.
Huh. From where?
Well, they sailed from Belfast, and who knows exactly what that means. You know, was that Irish or was that English and stuff? I don't know. The thing I found interesting here was, the thing that's really kept a rudder under that family history is exactly what African Americans, as you describe it, lack. My family, all over the country, but has been centered for 7 generations on a Midwestern farm, which they owned, which makes records of all kinds easy for us to know, and we weren't dispersed all over the place. But you look at African-American genealogy and say it got broken up in so many ways. Describe some of those for us.
Well, look, if you move across town, you lose records, let alone moving from Mississippi to Chicago in the Great Migration. So you're very lucky. You're blessed, as we would say. My family essentially has lived in the same place, the Gates line, in Cumberland, Maryland, since 1870. So we feature Jane Gates' family Bible, which is dated 1885. That means we have extraordinarily good records. But, Tom, the Mormons found 4 more lines of my family, about which I knew nothing past great-grandparents, back to the 18th century. They found my 5th great-grandfather on my mother's side, John Redmond, and they tell me all this on camera.
Yeah.
Now, I have been, since I'm 10, I am pursuing my family tree. I know nothing about this stuff, and they tell me that John Redmond fought in the American Revolution, and they hand me his pension application. I cried like a baby.
Well, I saw it, and it's moving. I mean, these are revelations one after another, not just for you, Skip Gates, but for all of the sort of crew that you took along on this ride. Really emotional, really eye-opening to all that came before, all that's veiled.
Oh, just totally. And we made, genealogy made the tomb of slavery speak. And genealogy can do that for any African-American who's listening to your program today.
Whoopi Goldberg speaks in the series to that kind of special burden that African-Americans as former slaves bear, the vagueness, the inaccessibility of family history. Let's listen to Whoopi.
So whole stories are gone, whole lives are gone, whole histories are gone. And that's bothered me because there is no emotional compensation for that. You know, when you sit with folks and they say, well, you know, my family goes back to County Cork or my family goes back to Sicily, you know, I say, I don't know, I think Florida.
Maybe Florida, says Whoopi Goldberg, and you can hear it. Skip Gates, give us some stories here about the kinds of things, first of all, on the genealogical side that mm-hmm. you were able to unearth here. Take us back through some of these families.
Well, let's start with Whoopi. Everyone knows about 40 Acres and a Mule and how the slaves did not get their 40 Acres and a Mule, which have been quite revolutionary, a revolutionary redistribution of land.
Would have been if it really took widely place widely.
It would have changed the history of America and black America. But Whoopi's ancestors did. There was something passed in 1866 called the Southern Homestead Act. Now, it sounds very vague. What the heck is that? Mm-hmm. But I was able to hand Whoopi the certificate showing that her great-great-grandparents petitioned for and received 104.5 acres in Florida. Mm. That's amazing. I mean, she knew nothing about that. And less than 10% of black people who petitioned for the land under the Homestead Act, the equivalent of 40 acres and a mule, got it. And Whoopi's ancestors got it.
Hang on a second. Okay. Let's just hear how Whoopi responded when you told her that she'd been one of those very few.
Now, we all know about 40 acres and the mule.
Right.
And it would have been so different
if
our ancestors actually could have gotten some land. But, of course, we never got the 40 acres. So
we did.
A very few resourceful, clever, entrepreneurial slaves like your great-great-grandparents, became homesteaders as a way to acquire property without capital.
I always knew somewhere in my gut that we had arrived early on.
Mm-hmm.
But this sort of, you know, cements that and makes it even bigger in me, that this is mine. Mm-hmm. This is mine. Let somebody tell me to go back to where I came from now.
It's true.
This is mine, Whoopi Goldberg's history, her family having something to call their own, and also being able to claim all those adjectives that you grant her slave ancestors, resourceful, clever, entrepreneurial, and there's the proof of it in the property.
Absolutely. And this brings 40 acres and a mule to life for any student in a way that an abstract textbook never could.
What about Oprah's slave era history?
Oprah's great-great-grandfather's name is Constantine. He's a slave in 1860. He's freed at the end of the Civil War in 1865. 1870, he shows up in the census for the first time, totally illiterate. 1876, he goes to a white man, John Watson was his name.
That's right.
John
That's
Watson,
right.
And says, I'll make you a deal.
Makes him a wager.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
I will pick 10 bales of cotton, which weighs 5,000 pounds.
Right.
In 1 year,
right.
If you give me those 80 acres of prime land that you own. And we know he was successful because June 21st, 1881, John Watson writes a deed of transference of property to Constantine Winfrey, giving him the 80 acres and recounting this story. And in 1880, the 1880 census, Constantine is now literate. And in 1906, when the colored schools, we would have said
was
being destroyed or threatened to be destroyed.
In his community.
In the community. Constantine saves the school by having it moved to his property, those same 80 acres of land. That's an amazing story.
And here's this chain. First, the land. I mean, 5,000 pounds of cotton. To picture the volume of that is overwhelming. But after the land, the literacy comes, and you can kind of draw a line between those two. You've got some property. You've got a stake in this world.
And that's a leitmotif throughout my family stories. You know, these people were all prominent today.
Mm.
But except for Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot and three of my branches, everyone else's ancestors were slaves till the end of the Civil War. And in 1870, when they show up in that federal census, they start off illiterate. They have no money. They have just the clothes on their back. And look, by 100 years later, 120 years later, how splendidly their descendants have done. And that's why I wanted to show that you didn't have to be a mulatto, you didn't have to be a house servant, that these people were incredibly resourceful against enormous odds. These are the true heroes of African American history.
And you've chosen some very, very successful people here.
Yeah.
There's a lot, so much to look at here, but your large sense of what is lost in a family's life, in an individual's life when family history is lost, and what is gained when it's rediscovered, when it's found?
Well, I can only speak for me. I mean, I watched I couldn't believe the reaction of my guests who reacted so emotionally. You see, Tom, when I could see the series, I thought that people would be far more emotionally engaged with the revelation of their African origins.
Mm-hmm. And tell me which tribe, which country, where exactly. Mm-hmm.
And they all wanted to know that, and they all were fascinated, but it was a much more abstract intellectual experience. The part that engaged them more emotionally was the revelation of the branches of their family trees. Mm-hmm. These stories, such as those of Oprah's great-grandparents and Whoopi's great-grandparents and Quincy's mm-hmm. ancestors, mm-hmm. these are the stories that move people. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot's family was so extraordinary because they were free Negroes for a very, very long time. And whereas two of my branches go back to 1750, mm-hmm. which is quite unusual.
Yes, it is.
Sarah's go back another generation to the beginning of the 1700s. And her family, free Negroes, moved from the North to the South following the Civil War to educate the newly freed slaves.
I love these stories and the interactions. I mean, you describe Quincy's ancestry, it turns out, a lot of European ancestry in there goes back to slave owners. You describe, I think it was the Laniers, a plantation-owning family around Vicksburg,
near Vicksburg,
which had their plantation more or less trashed when the Union Army came through there. And leaves me thinking, my great-great-whatever, Uncle Marcus was down there at Vicksburg, so was he marching through Quincy's great-great-great-granddaddy's house, who was the slave? I mean, the interweaving of history and personal stories that becomes possible to imagine once you know an individual family story, kind of remarkable.
It is. It's quite remarkable.
Your own family history, I was struck by this one when, if I've got this right, one of your ancestors, 18th century, got his freedom somehow and then was practically clubbed back into slavery.
That's right.
And managed to just scrape out of that by the skin of his teeth. What happened there?
His name was Isaac Clifford. He was my fourth great-grandfather, again on my mother's side. Mm-hmm. He was a free Negro. He was born before the American Revolution, about 1770. In 1791, he was in Hardy County, now West Virginia. A white man named James Ryan kidnapped him into slavery, put him on his farm. He managed to use the courts in Hardy County, Virginia, and sued for his freedom and had prominent white men in town come and testify on his behalf that he was a free Negro and he got his freedom. And again, I knew nothing about this story before November 22nd when they filmed me receiving my family tree. I just couldn't believe it.
No, there's a lot that you can be determined from the documents, and there are other things I found implied and suggested, and maybe in that story, for example, was that prominent white man who came to testify on his behalf, was that his father?
We don't know. We don't know who his father was. We just know
you
that
kind
all
of suggest it might have been in the way it's laid out in the documentary.
Well, all the documents list him as a mulatto, and very curiously, I am descended on my mother's side, not only from a white person. Many of us have white ancestry. According to Dr. Rick Kittles, one of our geneticists, the average African-American has 20% European ancestry. But my mitochondrial DNA, which is your mother's 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 line, goes back to a white woman. And that white woman most likely was an indentured servant who slept with a black man between 1619 and 1750. Tom, you never know. We might be cousins, bro.
Hey, my brother. It's good. Yeah, we're right in there.
You got a touch of the tar brush in there, Tom.
I'll take it. That's an amazing story. I want to just play a little of your reaction when you were told. I mean, it wasn't a secret that you had white ancestors.
No, right.
I mean, your father is in this show, and your mom, and these are very light-skinned, immediate ancestors. But here's where you're told that your ancestry is essentially half white. Let's listen to Skip Gates hearing that for the first time.
What we found in your results is really quite interesting. So there's very little chance of Native American ancestry.
Not one drop?
Nope. But the bar chart shows 50% European and 50% African.
50%? Does that mean I'm half white?
Yeah, you could say that. I would say half European because most of the white ancestry came from Northern Europe.
My family's always presumed that we had one white ancestor on my father's side. But your test suggests I have more than one white ancestor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, half of your ancestors were white.
50%? What does that mean to be 50% of European ancestry? How could you not know more ancestors than suspect you had one?
It means that if we ever get reparations, I only get half a check, brother. No more affirmative action for me. Doesn't mean anything to my sense of identity. I mean, I'm obviously an African American, but it means...
Our culture makes it so.
Culture, absolutely. But it means that my ancestral heritage is infinitely more complex than I ever dreamed. That there was a lot of, as they said in Piedmont, West Virginia, a lot of sneaking and creeping going on after dark back there in slavery times.
Yeah, well, that is human. I want to invite our listeners in. A lot of them have been waiting to join this conversation. My guest is Henry Louis Gates, Jr. He's executive producer of the new PBS series, African American Lives. Terry is calling from Florence, South Carolina. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good. We're good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I want to find out is about the DNA testing, and also tell you a bit about my family history. My ancestors, I can trace back as far as 1815, and my ancestor, Urban James, purchased 109 acres back in 1870.
Wow.
And then 20 years later, his five sons and his son-in-law purchased another 109 acres.
So they were doing all right. Good on them, and good on you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What we get ready to do this year coming up, family union time in July, is we're going to erect a historical marker in their honor.
Great.
And I would like to invite Dr. Gates down if he's able to come.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
There's an invitation. What about the DNA side, Terry? Are you prepared to do the cheek swab and trace it right on back?
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
Okay, well, there various geneticists do this. Dr. Fatima Jackson at the University of Maryland, College Park. Dr. Peter Forster at the University of Cambridge in England. And Dr. Rick Kittles at Ohio State. And Rick has a website. It's called AfricanAncestry.com. There's a charge. I think it's $200-$300. I'm not sure. But you could go on the internet and you could find all these people.
We'll get this on our website as well. At onpointradio.org, you can get a link to these. We'll put them
right. And our website on PBSPBS.org, you can link not only to the geneticist, but to our two genealogists, Johnny Cerny and Jane Ailes. And they can help you find your family tree. But that's a great story about his ancestors owning that land. It's very rare. Where did the slaves get the money?
In 1870. I mean, that's right out of it.
5 years after liberation from slavery.
Terry, do you know where they got the money?
I don't know where he got the money, but some of it he worked off, and they sold timber on the property.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the story was told to us.
Do you still have the land?
Yes, we still have the land in the family today.
Oh, man, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Terry, let me ask you while we've got you, because it's interesting throughout Skip Gates' series here. Do you have family stories at all or presumptions about where your family may have come from in Africa?
Not really as far as that type of family story. We have other stories about, you know, beaten and that they used to tie their hands behind their backs and put their feet on a board and tie them up and turn upside down in a hole.
Oh, wow.
A black hole, you know.
Yeah, it's very common in slavery.
Right.
You know, the only person who guessed, Tom, I asked each of my guests before we revealed where they were from in Africa.
Right.
The only person who guessed correctly was Bishop T.D. Jakes. And he said, well, my family has always said that we were Igbo, and that's been passed down for 100 years.
This is Nigeria territory.
Eastern Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And 17% of the slaves are African-American ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the ancestors of the contemporary African-American community came from Eastern Nigeria. And I turned the card over and it said, T.D. Jakes is an Igbo.
Bingo.
It's quite amazing.
But the rest, way off. Oprah, the family story was Zulu.
Zulu, and she's from West Africa.
Right. I mean, African-American slaves essentially did not come from South Africa.
No.
We learn in your
in
show.
In fact, thanks to the work of Dr. David Eltis at Emory University, we know that 50% of the slaves came from West Africa between Senegal and Ghana. 16% came from eastern Nigeria. We know the ports that they came through. 27% came from Angola, and 2% came from Mozambique.
Terry, thanks very much for your call. Sylvia is calling from Saugus, Massachusetts. Hi, Sylvia. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
We're good.
Hi,
thank
Sylvia.
You.
This program is fascinating. I was supposed to be going shopping, but here I am.
That's all right. What do you know?
Well, my question is, I am a first-generation American. My family came from the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, would I be able to use this?
Oh, absolutely, because your ancestors 5-6 generations ago came from Africa, without a doubt. I mean, we all black people came from Africa. So, and the
right.
DNA is passed down through the mother's line. So as long as you don't have a white female ancestor like I do, the mitochondrial DNA test can reveal what ethnic group your slave ancestors came from in Africa.
Sylvia, let me ask you the same question. Does your family have family lore about where that may have been, or is it just terra incognita?
Well, it's interesting. My youngest son was in the Peace Corps, and he was in Cameroon for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and he said that so many people there looked like him, and they said to him, oh, yes, your ancestors definitely come from Cameroon. So that would be interesting to find out.
Yeah, well, two of our guests had ancestry from the Cameroon, so mm-hmm. you have a shot.
Okay.
Sylvia, thank you for calling. I mean, of course, this is not just for African Americans. This new genetic testing, anybody can dive in and get a sense of where their family's from.
And the admixture test reveals what extent of ancestry you embrace from the following four groups: European, Sub-Saharan African, mm-hmm. Asian, mm-hmm. and Native American.
One of the African Americans Skip Gates talked to was Bishop T.D. Jakes in Dallas, got an enormous church there, a real rocking preacher there. But he talked about the hesitancy that some African American families have felt about looking back into rough history.
I don't think my father wanted us to know mm-hmm. how bad it was.
Yeah.
Almost like they thought that if they didn't tell us, we wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think it's true for many of our people that mm-hmm. slavery was an embarrassment.
Right.
And it was a stigma.
Right.
And they just wanted it to go away.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so they would share the successes, but not the struggles.
Not the struggles, and they were huge. Did you feel that hesitance in your subjects in this experiment?
No, because I was revealing things that had not been revealed to them. And so they were amazed. I mean, they wanted more knowledge, more information, and it moved them to tears quite often.
The story of the murder, effectively, of T.D. Jakeson, was it his grandfather or great-grandfather?
It was his grandfather, and his grandfather worked at a turpentine plant.
That would be in Pine Country in the South?
That's right. He would swim home every day and have dinner. In the South, you call dinner, lunch is dinner.
Mm-hmm. When I grew up as well, his house was across the lake next to the turpentine plant.
That's right, and he would jump in the water and he'd swim over and he'd have lunch and then he would swim back. Mm. And he had a fight the day before with some white men at the turpentine plant. And he jumped in as he normally did and he got entangled in barbed wire, which had been placed there. And T.D. Jakes had just discovered that when I present his grandfather's death certificate. Mm-hmm. And Tom, we knew something was shaky and I was going to push him about it because the man, the white man who had signed the death certificate, wrote accidental drowning in such large letters that it just dripped with guilt. Mm-hmm. It was very, very moving.
Diving into the barbed wire, they knew his way home, and his way home was not a good one on that day. Theodore's calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Theodore. You're on the air, my friend.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to make a few comments about my own family history, which I've known for a long time. I'm 74 years old, so I have some history myself. My family comes from Wilmington, North Carolina. The patriarch was an Igbo who was, you know, I guess, shanghaied and brought to North Carolina. And he was on one plantation, then switched to or sold to the plantation of Robert Howe, who was a general in the Revolutionary Army and who was adjutant at the court-martial of Benedict Arnold.
How did you discover all this, Theodore?
Well, Anthony, who was the great-grandfather, his original name was Obuto, but they changed it to Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
And he came from a woodworking clan in Nigeria.
But this is the very stuff that's so hard to keep track of. How did your family manage to do it?
Well, through family.
Mm-hmm.
It's chronicled in a book published by the New Brunswick, Wilmington Library.
So you're very lucky indeed. Would you be willing, Theodore, to put the cotton swab under your inner cheek and have the genetic test that would be a kind of a truth tester on all of this family story? We all have family
story. Oh, sure, because he was married to a Tuscarora woman who was the ward of Robert Howe. And because, you know, many Indians, for a variety of reasons, were indentured.
Native Americans, that is, and so your family's woven in there, too. Theodore, we got some of the splendor of that mural, and it raises so many issues, a lot of them that Henry Louis Gates has looked at here about surprises back there.
Well, big surprises that most of us have absolutely no Native American ancestry. 1937, Zora Neale Hurston, the great novelist, wrote this essay. He said, I am the only American Negro who is not descended from some Cherokee chief.
As Oprah said, there was a time in Mississippi when everybody wanted to say, or all over the country,
Black
it, was,
America.
It was hip to have Native American blood.
Anything but African. You see, we wanted that nobility of the Native American ancestry.
Proud chiefs.
The average African American has 5% or less. Now think about it. There are 35 million African-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
They're, relatively speaking, a handful of Native Americans.
Yes.
Those few Native Americans would be busy sleeping with all these Black people and say, that didn't happen. It just didn't happen. Mm. Only two of the nine of us in our series had any significant amount of Native American ancestry. But that gentleman who just called has an extraordinarily rich and complex family history, and he's very, very lucky.
Lucky to have such a handle on it.
But you know what, Tom? With using these new technologies of genealogy, far more of us can uncover these buried stories about our slave past. And it's past time. It is past time.
Tell us some more of the surprises that came out here when the genetic reports came in, because they were quite astounding, and I wish you'd share some of them with
us. Well, Quincy's white ancestor, Quincy is about 39% European, but his white ancestor, as you intimated, was a Southerner, and he was a Confederate spy. But he didn't rape Quincy's Black female ancestor, he had a relationship with her long after slavery. And so it was a relationship of a different order. And Quincy was astonished at that. And Quincy's white line goes back to the 12th century to the King of England.
Good heavens.
The Lanier family.
Let's get a bit of Quincy Jones responding when you were sharing some of this with him.
Does it bother you to be descended from slave owners? I mean,
most of us were.
Yeah. That's true.
We were, man.
I know.
Most of us were.
I was.
Yeah. God, it's probably the most common thing in America, you know, because everybody is not cold black because it's got gumbo gone.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a serious gumbo. That thing went on to America a long time, you know,
oh,
the
yeah.
color thing.
It's still around.
Still on going
it's
on.
Still around.
Still going on, absolutely,
yeah, yeah,
man.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I remember getting the door slammed in my face many a night, man, taking the sister home, man, and perhaps Sugar Hill thought I was too dark, you know.
No.
It happened here and Washington, D.C.
Quincy ain't nothing dark about you.
Oh, but please, are you kidding? So compared to what?
Compared to Lena Horne.
Right.
Maybe.
The great Quincy Jones there with Henry Louis Gates looking back on family history, which, as he says, as for many African-Americans, includes an awful lot of white. Let's listen to Oprah Winfrey talking here about the significance of coming from slaves and working hard in her own life in acknowledgement of their struggles. Oprah.
It's one of the reasons why I work so hard. And I feel like I have not even the right to be tired ever, because I know I come from this. I didn't know their names and backgrounds, but I know I come from this. You know, I feel that it is, it's, for me, it's empowering and strengthening and
we all come from slaves.
Yeah.
All of us.
Oprah Winfrey talking there with Henry Louis Gates. Sarah is calling from Saugus, Massachusetts. Hi, Sarah, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Dr. Hanks, I'm very impressed with what you are doing.
Thank you.
On the other hand, in addition to the genetic connection or genetic roots of African Americans to Africa, is there also opportunity for them to learn more into the history of Africa, the achievement that Africa made in spite of the slavery and colonization and the process of dispossession of the Africans, being able to use their own resources to develop themselves?
Are you from Africa yourself, Sarah?
I'm from Ghana, West Africa. And what puzzles me is that there is a real rich history on Africa, and if America can learn so much about European history to apply to their process of development to now, why isn't that African history be also made part of mainstream education? Because America, as great as it is, when it comes to understanding other cultures, particularly African culture, there's a huge amount of ignorance and them being quite clueless about things in Africa.
Sarah, we hear it. Skip Gates, what about it?
Sister Sarah, you are absolutely correct. Americans are woefully ignorant of other languages, other cultures, even European languages and cultures, let alone sub-Saharan African. My dear friend and colleague, Kwame Anthony Appiah, Joe Appiah's son. Sarah, you'll know who he was. He's one of the founding fathers of Ghana. Mm-hmm. He's now a professor of philosophy, unfortunately, at Princeton, not at
right,
Harvard.
Yeah.
He and I edited the Encyclopedia Africana, which is the black equivalent of the Encyclopedia Britannica, just so we could codify knowledge about the black world. And Sarah, I'm a professor of African studies as well as African-American studies, and I teach African literature as well as African-American literature. And yes, we're all Africans. The only question, we all started in Africa and migrated out. The only question is, Tom, if you're a recent African like I am or a more distant African like you appear to be.
Oh. But you're having fun now. let me ask you on that point.
You could be one of those octoroons.
Wow. I don't know. I can hear my my Viking ancestors scratching their beards on that one, but maybe.
They sailed around lots.
Yeah, they did.
On
they
those
did.
Boats.
Those boats could move. Those oars were long.
They had to dock someplace.
You go back with Chris Tucker, movie star, to Angola.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Mbundu people in northern Angola, through Chris's Y chromosome.
Mm-hmm.
See, men have a Y chromosome. That's what makes you a man. So for a man, we could test their Y chromosome.
Back through fathers.
Through fathers. Mm-hmm. And for everyone, mitochondrial DNA, which is through your mother, and then admixture tests for everyone. So we gave all the men three tests, all the women two. And Chris goes straight back to the Mbundu people, and I took him back to his genetic soul brothers and soul sisters.
It was amazing. Back to a village that may well have been a village like the kind of village his family very likely came from.
Absolutely. And they had never seen an African-American before, so it was quite moving.
What about you refer in the series to the ambivalence that some African-Americans have felt over the years about making exactly this connection? I mean, Alex Haley celebrated it, but there's also been a kind of a willful ignorance at a certain point about Africa and African lineage. Do you see that breaking down now that science and genetics are making these links clear?
Well, in the 50s, nobody that I knew wanted to be of African descent. I mean, you would brag about your white ancestry, or you'd brag about the
Cherokee blood.
Yeah, your mythological Cherokee blood. But you didn't want to be African because we were victims of racial stereotypes just like white people were. I mean, our images of Africa came from Tarzan like yours did, Tom. But now, because of travel, the growth of the black middle class, television, film, the emergence of Africa through independence. You know, many, many of us, far more of us, are eager to embrace our African ancestry. And African Americans spend billions of dollars a year in tourism dollars going back to Africa.
And science making a very targeted connection very possible. Brad is calling from Canton, New York. Hi, Brad, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm very excited about Dr. Gates's project. I have two mixed-race adopted daughters who are now adults, and I have four African-American grandchildren. One of my adopted daughters find her birth parents.
Oh, good.
And I'm very excited about the possibility and want to know if you like this idea of having every child in elementary school learn how to trace his and her ancestry as a project for learning how to read, learning pride, and learning self-respect.
Make genealogy part of it.
That's why I picked eight prominent African Americans to seduce school children into the wonders, A, of science, genetic science, and B, genealogical and archival research.
If Oprah did it, maybe you will. If Chris Tucker did it, maybe you will.
Yeah, you walk in the inner city school and say, today we're going to learn about the wonders of the double helix and DNA discovered by Watson and Crick. People say, get out of here. You know, like, I'm not interested. But if you say, I'm going to show you how Chris Tucker found his ancestry in northern Angola, that's a whole other thing.
Brad, thank you very much for your call. Skip Gates, our time is growing short here. I wonder where you think this may take us, and I'm using the big capital U there, African Americans, all Americans, as we learn more about the details of our family history, the way in which they're so interwoven. You had so many of your guests who had, you know, ancestry they didn't expect in East Asia, in Europe, some Native American. Where does it take us as we see this complex fabric, complex history?
I hope it takes us to a deeper cognizance that we are all citizens of the world, that we're all cousins, we're brothers and sisters, that we might have fought to protect our ethnic boundaries in the day, but when the lights came off, man, those barriers came tumbling down.
Did you ever get your roots moment, your Alex Haley envy resolved in this experiment?
Oh, yeah, man. We found out that my African roots went to that African kingdom called Northern Europe.
Somewhere between Paris and Dublin, you say.
Yeah, I'm still analyzing that 50% African ancestry, but
analyzing or psychoanalyzing?
No.
How does that sit with you?
There's a new test called a microarray test, and they did it on camera. And The database is still incomplete, but it shows that I'm somewhere in from West Africa between the Mende people in Sierra Leone and the Yoruba people in Nigeria. I'll take that for the time being.
Take that and watch it span right up into Northern Europe as well. History is complex. Family history is complex and wonderful. We thank you so much for sharing with us in this documentary, American African-American Lives on PBS, the conclusion tomorrow night, and in our conversation right here. Henry Louis Gates, Jr., thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure.
For links to information about African-American history and genealogy, go to our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.